just like a totally different place to drink beer from, isn't it? So I'm going to tell you like how warm it is here in just a moment. Not just warm, but humid. But just for the sake of everyone waiting online, I put the little I am live tweet out there somewhere. There we go. And straight into it. So this is obviously a live one again. Last week I was in a location where live was just never going to happen. I was literally getting, on a good day, if the wind was blowing the right direction, like 1 megabit or something like that. So my son Ari and I sat outside on the farm stay we were at, and we just literally recorded amongst all the animals, which is great. Now, different place, different animals. I'm going to get to those in just a moment. Sponsor first this week, there is still a sponsor, even though I'm floating around in all these strange places, is 1Password. And of course, 1Password, I must be just about to touch a decade since I actually first downloaded 1Password, because I know it was over Christmas and I know it was 2010 going into 2011. Everyone watching this knows why I'm endorsed in 1Password. It's fun even watching Ari at 11 years old now. He has a little, in Australia, there's a pocket money system called Spriggy, where you can sign your kids up for a Spriggy, and that they don't get cash. They literally get a debit card on a Spriggy account. So anyway, both the kids, we just put in like a nominated amount of money in each week, and they have this little debit card, and there's an app where they and the parents can sort of see what they're spending and see what they're saving. You can set savings goals and stuff. Anyway, it's super cool because he has his Spriggy card details in 1Password. He has a shared vault, which I can still see, so I can see his things, but he doesn't just put his passwords in there. He puts his credit card or his debit card, as it may be. Same sort of thing. So, yeah, what a nice thing to, for a little kid that age to be able to learn, you know, like get into those habits straight off the bat. And he's just part of my family account, so 5 different people in the family will get access to it. And that was not even a prepared pitch. It was just the first thing that came to me, because today he wanted to buy something that I might come back to later on when I talk about my tours at the moment. And he's like, hey, what's the credit card number? And I was like, well, it's actually in your 1Password. So big thanks to those folks for this week. Now, I do get to see the comments, of course, this time. I've got my laptop here all set up. I just tweeted a photo of the location shot. As you can sort of see, that's the plunge pool. This is a little villa in a place called Port Douglas. Now, Port Douglas is part of what we refer to as far north Queensland, with Queensland being our northeasternmost states, the state that actually goes the furthest north. And it is tropical. So what are we at the moment? It's we're at going on 6 p.m. It's 28 degrees Celsius. It feels a lot more humid than what the stats say. It just feels super, super warm and sticky the whole time. Like pretty much, I mean, we're quite a way north of the Tropic of Capricorn here, so pretty much everything between there and then equator to Tropic of Cancer has very sort of similar, you know, like constantly warm weather. So this is a super interesting place here. We drove from the last place I was at, and I'm at the end of me doing the cyber thing. I'm going to go through and talk a little bit more about some of the things I've actually seen. But we drove from the other spot. I think it took 8-something hours yesterday. And we sort of, as you go further north, you ratchet up another few degrees Celsius and everything becomes just more and more tropical. So here is just like full of very green cane fields, lots of tropical plants and things. I've got a big tweet thread going with 1, 2, 3 photos each day, just showing interesting things. Lots of crocodiles. That was fun. We went and did a crocodile tour today. And then as we're walking out of the crocodile tour, Ari, my son, he goes to put his hand on the rail and he's like, nah, that's a snake. And the snake just slithers off. So that's the kind of place it is here. Now, warning what might happen very soon, because we got here yesterday at around about this time of day, is the most bats I have ever seen in one go just all sort of take off and spread out across the sky, and they are noisy bastards too. In fact, I went for a walk just after dusk and there was a tree full of them. It was insane. So anyway, I'm going to come back and talk more about the environment here and the tropical things in just a moment, because I do have a few cyber things I want to talk about this week. And as I take a quick sip, I'm going to read my comments here as well. Christian, greetings from snowy Norway. I obviously do keep track of what's going on in Norway. It's very, very different to here at the moment. Shiny Docs in the UK, following the updates enviously. Raining from Barcelona, minus 15 from Toronto. It's been a lot of thousands of years since it was minus 15 here, I'll tell you that much. Anyway, stick around if you want to hear more about the environment here and after the cyber things, because I am going to come back to it. But there were a few things which I've been making a few notes of. And I have actually been trying to stay a little bit connected to the whole industry cyber things. I have been very actively not answering emails. Can you actively not answer emails? I've been filing a lot of stuff away. I have an out of office, which is like, I'm away. No commitment to when I'm coming back. Responses may be delayed. I'm dealing with all the stuff that's important. But my threshold of what is important has changed somewhat. Let's just say that. So a few little things. Now, number one, since the last week, NordVPN, who, again, I have a close association with, has produced a resource which I think is pretty good, and I had a little bit of input in it, not a lot, but I did get a nice heads up, and I did have the opportunity to put a nice comment at the beginning of it. Now, this is, I'm wondering if my laptop misbehaves when it's so hot, because it's a bit janky at the moment. But this is a cybersecurity A to Z from NordVPN. 20 cybersecurity terms you need to know. Now, many of the people watching this are going to be familiar with these terms anyway, so I'm not exactly going to go through it in detail. But I think this is a really good resource to give people who are maybe not as InfoSec aware. So folks like 99% of the audience out there, 99% of the world. So if we have a jump through some of these things, and they've done it in sort of the A to Z kind of way, where it's like, hey, let's take something that starts with A, antivirus, and B is botnet, and so on and so forth. 6D, data breach. Oh, this one will be good. Oh, no, it's good. I've read it already. But anyway, the point is, there's a lot of stuff in here which is presented in very layperson-friendly terms. And I think that's important because we want like the normal, everyday people to try and get a bit of a better grasp on this sort of stuff. What else in here was particularly of note? Periodically check whether your accounts have been compromised in a data breach on haveibeenpwned.com. Good advice, Nord. Thank you. So there is that, and I will link to this in the blog post that I put together for this, and I'll probably push that out. I don't know if we'll push it out tomorrow morning, or later tomorrow. I'm going to the Great Barrier Reef tomorrow. I'll talk about that later on. So that was those folks. NordVPN there with their A to Z of cybersecurity things. Another thing that just kind of made me think about how weird and messed up things are. And I'll just read this as I made the note. Someone sent a link with tens of thousands of names and email addresses from a medical lab testing service, and they can't get a response from them. And this happens, maybe not daily, maybe every 2 days, where someone will pop up and they'll say, now, you know what, if I say it this way, someone pops up and sends me data, then it is, not just daily, multiple times a day. And in this particular case, someone sent me a link to a publicly accessible URL. I got the impression that it was not meant to be publicly accessible, but it was from a medical testing lab. And fortunately, the link only had email addresses, first name and last name. But there were tens of thousands. I won't say the exact number, but let's just say it was tens of thousands. What's that? 5 digits. And the thing was sort of frustrating on multiple levels. It was frustrating, number one, because the person said, look, I tried contacting them via their public email address, publicized public email address, and I couldn't get a response. Number one, that is frustrating. Number two, I looked at it and went, I'm on holidays. I just talked about like the importance level of the emails. I really don't have time to do this. And it is just one. I've literally got a folder in my Outlook where I just dump stuff that I just haven't been able to follow up, but is real live data breach stuff. And like, isn't it a shame that we're there? You know, like we need more people and more resources to actually be able to go and process this stuff. So I flicked it to a journo that I often do a lot of work with, and he was very busy as well. And it's like, bam, 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 like three opportunities here where the exposure of tens of thousands of records from a medical system, even though it wasn't medical information that was exposed, and we're here in this situation going, either we can't get a response or people are just too busy to deal with it. And to be clear, myself and the journalists, it's not our responsibility to deal with it either. It'd be different if it was the company and they're like, yeah, we know we got our data exposed, we're just busy. Incidentally, that did happen with an Indian pathology lab. I've got to find the references now. Indian pathology lab. Now, this was some years ago. I remember this because they said, here you go, there's a blog post on this. This is my blog. 43,203 Indian patient pathology reports were left publicly exposed by Health Solutions. And the thing that really struck me on this, this shit just doesn't get any better. This was the 5th of December, 2016, more than 4 years ago. And when this was reported to them, that they had tens of thousands of, not just like email addresses and names exposed, but actual pathology results, including things like HIV test results. Their response was, again, keep in mind, this is early December. We are moving to a new domain in January and retiring the existing website. So these problems will be fixed in Jan. It's like, you don't understand. You don't take tens of days or even tens of hours to just turn the switch off when you have HIV test results publicly exposed. Like, you stop everything and that becomes your number one priority. So that is a little bit of a sad state of affairs that we are where we are with that stuff. So, looking at my comments here. Someone thinks Dracula is visiting with the bats. I'll tell you what, like, have a look at the videos in my tweet thread. I've just got the one long thread going for this whole holiday just to keep a nice, you know, thing that people can follow through. But have a listen to them. They're insane. And even walking out just before to go and get some of these guys, I'm holding beer for people listening to the podcast. You can see them all sleeping up in the trees. Like, you look up in some trees in particular, like, holy shit, like, every one of those things there is a bat. And it's just an immense, dense population of bats up there. What else we got here? Other people in other parts of the world, hopefully enjoying seeing some Australian stuff. I've got one more cyber thing I'll talk about in a moment, but I've said a few times before, just because of how crazy and unstable my life was, particularly last year, and I've got blog posts on this, but most people know what I mean, but when I got to the start of this year, I was like, look, I really don't want to have to go very far. Like, I don't want to go overseas anywhere near as much. I still expected to go a little bit. Of course, that's now changed. I just want to see more of Australia. And then, of course, we've had the COVID situation, and I believe I can't go overseas. I've got no inclination to actually try. But it's like, okay, well, that's that problem solved. We're definitely going to be seeing Australia. So it's actually been really good just driving around, seeing stuff. We've driven now just over 2,000 kilometres, I think 2,100 kilometres since we left, and we've got about 10,000 K in total. So on the one hand, 20% down. On the other hand, I've got to do what I just did four times over in order to actually complete this lap. But it is a fascinating country, and if you have a look at some of the photos I've been tweeting, holy shit, like, it's just, there's an amazing place here. All right, so the other thing, and this became big news, and then it led to other things which I thought were just interesting to discuss, is the SolarWinds situation. Now, in case you're like me and you missed the news when it first broke several days ago, SolarWinds is a service that was used by, it looks like, about 18,000 customers. And let me actually get their explanation of what it does. I always like to sort of quote from the original source, SolarWinds Orion. The Orion platform, scalable IT monitoring from SolarWinds. SolarWinds, and I clicked the link and it disappeared. Whether you use one product or the whole suite, the Orion platform will help you make IT management look easy. I'll tell you what, people using Orion looked like something the other day, but it wasn't easy. So it looks like a nation state actor who I've heard not formally attributed, at least not from a government sense, to Russia, but certainly attributed by the likes of, I believe, FireEye, who discovered this, did actually attribute it back to the Russians, have said, look, what's happened is many months ago, someone was able to compromise an update server, put in a Trojan update. It looks like that update then would sit there doing what it was meant to do for about 2 weeks, and then it would hit a CNC server somewhere. It would phone out to that 2 weeks after the update, obviously to try and fly under the radar so that there's no unusual activity right after an update happening. And then it would take commands from whoever was in control of that CNC environment. Now, this has obviously become very political because it looks to be state-sponsored. It looks like a bunch of different government departments in different parts of the world were running SolarWinds Orion as well, which didn't work out so great for them. But there are a couple of interesting things that came out of this. Now, number one was, apparently, and I'm just going to click on the link here because Zach Whitaker's actually got it in his tweet here. Let's just read the tweet as it loads up. SolarWinds, whose software was backdoored to allow hackers to breach US government agencies, was warned last year that anyone could access its update server using the password SolarWinds123. Now, how many characters? It doesn't matter. That's not the point. Like, that's just atrociously bad. It is atrociously bad, but it's also not abnormal for large organizations. And I say this after having spent 14 years in a large organization that should have known better in many cases. Won't get any more into detail on that right now. But the point is that this sort of thing, it's kind of like it's surprising, but it's not surprising. It's like, wow, organization uses a shitty password. I am shocked and appalled. But then you look at the impact that this potentially then had. Now, I'm not clear if the lineage has been drawn from the weak password all the way through to the ultimate breach of their services, but it is not a good look either way. So there's that. Now, where the argument began is someone made the point, and this is a very traditional IT management sort of thinking position, which is that this is why patches should always be carefully tested before being installed. I'm going, okay, hang on. So I appreciate the handbook says that. The mechanics of this, you've got 18,000 customers. It's going to span a whole range of organizations of different sizes. Now, what would have had to have happened in order to identify this vulnerability, keeping in mind that it was sat there dormant for 2 weeks before phoning home? Now, is someone going to literally reverse engineer the patch? A lot of big, I mean, you would have to be in an organization that through regulatory obligations or other just pure sense of due diligence was able to throw huge amounts of resources at every single patch that got released. The chances of someone spotting that are extremely low. And inevitably, we went many, many months from the Trojan patch through to the point where it was actually discovered, where none of the 18,000 customers did actually manage to find it. So evidently, this was not something which was easily discoverable. But I think the thing that got me is the assertion that organizations should be sufficiently equipped to not only be able to go and inspect every single patch, but also have the skill set required to identify something like that, because that is the sort of thing that's going to be very, very hard to pick up. So what are your options, particularly for organizations that do regular releases of patches? And when I say organizations, I mean, in this case, the likes of SolarWinds, not the organizations using them. So if they're doing regular patches, how much of your IT infrastructure or IT resources do you need to tie up just like literally looking at patches, trying to figure out whether they're going to go bad in 2 weeks from now? What if it's 3 weeks from now? What if it's 27 days, just to pick a nice odd number? So the reality of that, it is very inconsistent with the expectations people have. Now, someone else made the point. They said, well, really what should be happening is that an environment like this should have a very strict set of allow rules and a firewall in terms of where it can phone out to. Now, I don't disagree with that. I think that that's a very good fundamental premise, and that serves you well across many updates in the future as well. It's certainly not foolproof either, because there may be legitimate updates that require phoning out to a different host name, and then you've got a different domain name or IP address, whatever it may be, and then you've got to deal with the change management for that. And of course, in a case like this, that would have actually stopped the problem, yet here we are with a huge number of customers actually getting hosed by it. So inevitably, this is not done extensively. And part of it is because it's a pain in the ass doing the configuration management. And every time I talk about this, I think back with shivers to what is now, how long ago did I leave? Approaching 6 years ago since I left corporate world, but how hard it was to get stuff like this done. So what's your option? Well, stuff gets massively delayed. So now the patches and things that vendors are pushing out, you can't adopt quickly, so now you have different problems, because very often these patches are fixing other bugs. Very often they're fixing security holes. Very often they're adding features which you can get benefit from, except you're now adding all of this other overhead to the process. So there needs to be mitigating controls to try and be the stopgap for when a vendor either screws something up or gets hosed like they did in this case, and the firewall rule is a good example for that. But the expectation that organizations with all of the time and money constraints they have can somehow throw sufficient resources to be able to reverse engineer every single patch and try and figure out what it does before they install it just doesn't hold water. And it just feels like someone like going through the compliance handbook and it's like, yeah, that's great, mate, but what's it actually like in the real world? So let me get off my high horse on that and I'm going to drop back to the comments and have a look at what people are saying over here. And then I'm going to talk about all of the other environmental things here that I've been seeing, just for those that are interested. Okay. What else is happening here? So there's a really funny comment here. Strata Strong says, reminds me of the password from Spaceballs, 12345. I kid you not, like just behind there in the window, my daughter is laying there on the couch watching Spaceballs. Not a joke. Beautiful timing. Thank you, Strata Strong, for that. Christian says, the password was also in their Git repo, and they fixed both problems from what I read out of the reply. But what did they change the new passwords to? Well, SolarWinds 1234. One of the things that happens after an incident like this is people go, wow, that's it. I wouldn't be using these guys again. I wouldn't be using any more SolarWinds. But how many other organizations are out there just like SolarWinds from a week ago, right? And now SolarWinds has had this massive wake-up call, and this is a very, very anecdotal. I do not have any evidence to support this. I would love someone to get some empirical data on it. But I think it would be a very safe bet to say that fast forward a month from now, you're probably going to be much better off using SolarWinds than any of the other organizations that do the same shitty stuff that just haven't been caught yet. Anyway, that's my view on that. there's more Spaceball comments in here. All right, so let's move on. Now, the rest of this is basically just going to be about the environment and holidays and things like this and what it's like in Australia. So if you're looking for cyber content, you're probably in the wrong place. So what I thought I'd do, I'd go through some of these pictures I've been tweeting out, and I'll just explain where we've been because, you know, I think people, and to some extent including myself, don't have a lot of appreciation for just how big and diverse this country is. So Australia is almost the same size as mainland USA. So very, very similar to that. I'm excluding Alaska from that, the free states. Very, very similar size to continental Europe as well. And if you think about, you know, think about Europe, think about all the way from, you know, the top of Norway down to like the south of Spain or Italy or somewhere like that, and think about the diversity there. And there's a lot of diversity in culture, I get that, but just think about the environment, you know, from you know, freezing Arctic winters through to, you know, just super sweaty, saunery places, you know, like this. And this is what Australia is, and we're going to see all of those extremes on this big trip we're doing. So it is a massive, massive place. And when you look at how far we've gone doing more than 2,000 kilometres, it is a tiny bit of the East Coast. Now, what makes Australia really different to both Europe and the US is there is just about nothing in the middle. It is all around the edges, and it is mostly around the East Coast. So if you pick Australia and you pick sort of the Gulf and Carpentaria up the top, and you go across, sort of make a triangle out of it, and then you go down the East Coast and you go around the bottom to the probably the middle bit in the bottom, the Great Australian Bight down the bottom bit, there's stuff around there, and there's a little bit of stuff down the bottom right, which is Australian Capital Territory. We don't care too much about that. It's full of politicians. There's Tasmania down the bottom, and there's Perth on the other side, and that's just about it. There is Alice Springs and Ayers Rock, now Uluru, right in the middle, and there's Darwin up the top, and that's it. Like, our population density is extremely low. I think it's about 2-something people per square kilometre. So most of the country's got nothing inhabitable in it, and most of it is just around the very, very edges. So that makes it a really, really interesting place to visit, because if you want to get from different places, you're normally flying. So for us to drive is a little bit unusual. So in terms of driving Australia, a lot of people have been asking about things like speed limits. So in simple terms, most, say, roads out in the middle of nowhere where it would be, you know, one lane each way, be 100 kilometres an hour, everything in Australia is kph. If you get to a freeway, usually where there is divided road, so you'd have two lanes here and then grass and trees and strips and, you know, like median strips, and then another two lanes over there, 110 k an hour. The exception to that is in the Northern Territory, there are a bunch of roads that are 130 k an hour. Up until just over a decade ago, there used to be stretches there that were unlimited. Now, that apparently was not a very politically correct approach to have unlimited sections of road. So they started trialing 130 zones instead. Our death rate actually went up at the time because the problem out there is fatigue. Like, it's just massive, massive distances. And this is what I'm yet to see. This is what is coming up. In fact, later this month, we'll get to dates and things when I get there. So I'm yet to see this myself, but from my reading. So the problem is a lot of fatigue, but the other problem is political correctness. So now's a lot of 130 limits. So what it means is that very, very long roads, in some cases, just straight for hundreds of kilometers. In fact, I tweeted a photo partway through this journey, which is like your next turn. In fact, I'll tell you, because I'm going to start going through some of these photos here. It's something along the lines of, the next intersection is 475 kilometers away. So that gives you a sense of like just how far it is. Now, that said, the roads, the quality, certainly everything up the East Coast is all pretty good. It's not like you're going to be driving over potholes and things like that, but you're going between a mix of much further south, some very good freeways where you can just like literally set the cruise control on about 110. The E63S AMG that I have has got radar cruise control, so you can set it on like 110K an hour and it will just sit dead on that, and then it'll come up behind another car and then it will slow down. It will maintain the right distance. So that's great. But then as you go further north, you end up going through a lot of small towns. So you'll be cruising along. As you get further north, it drops to 100K an hour, no problems. And then it's like 80, 60 town, 60, 80, 100. And it's just that continual up and down cadence. So the average speed that we had for the 8 hour something drive from Hayman Island, where we just were up to here, or Airlie Beach up to here, was about 88 kilometers an hour. And then the fuel consumption for that car, keeping in mind it's 450 kilowatts and 850 newton meter twin turbo V8, was about 11.5 liters per 100 kilometer, which I don't think is too bad for that car. It does have cylinder deactivation, so it can go from 8 cylinders down to 4. It doesn't do that at highway speeds. It just does that around town at very light throttle. And other than a little indicator on the dash, you never even know it. You just never feel it, which is pretty cool. Now, look at the comments as they come up as well. Darren said, drive the Nullarbor, has a 250 kilometer dead straight road. So yeah, that is a very long piece of road. Now, looking at where we've been, so I did that last update in what was the name of the suburb there? Barmoya. Looks like my son is back from the gym. Good on him. I'm sitting here drinking beer. So Barmoya was pretty cool. It was a farm stay. It's just like feed the chickens or get the chickens eggs in the morning, you know, pat the cows, that sort of thing, which was actually really nice. We had 3 nights there. It was a good sort of intermediate stop along the way. We've been trying not to do drives that are too long, particularly with the kids. So we sort of kept those days a bit shorter and broke it up by doing the farm stay, which was fun. Now, from there, we went up to a location called Airlie Beach. Now, Airlie Beach is in the Whitsundays, and the Whitsundays is very famous in Australia because it's the southern end of the Great Barrier Reef. Everyone knows the Great Barrier Reef, one of the seven natural wonders of the world. Was it good?
Yeah.
Cool. He's done. So that was really good there. So we went to Airlie Beach, left the car somewhere, jumped onto a ferry, and then we took a ferry for about 45, 50 minutes over to Hayman Island, which is one of the islands in the Whitsundays, which just has just absolutely spectacular clear blue water, depending on where you go, amazing beaches as well. The downside, and this is what I'll get to in this location here as well in a moment, is that there's a lot of stuff that wants to eat you. And I know that a lot of Australia is like this, but the big thing there is the stingers. So between November and May every year, the waters have things like Irukandji jellyfish. Now, if you don't know what a bloody Irukandji jellyfish is, look that sucker up, because basically you get bitten by one of them, stung by one of them, and it's like, we're calling the chopper now to take you to hospital, and you're going to be in excruciating pain apparently for about a month, which doesn't sound very good. So you don't swim in the water unless you have like a suit, so you can get like it's not like a wetsuit, that'd be too warm because the water's about 30 degrees, but you get a very sort of lightweight suit so that if anything drags across your arm or anything, it's just on the suit. So everywhere you go here, it's like, don't go in the water because of the jellyfish. Now, we're going to go on the Great Barrier Reef tomorrow to do some snorkeling. We, I believe, are going to need suits, even though we're quite a way out in the reef. I've been here in previous times at other times of the year, and we haven't needed a suit. So kind of just depends. So looking back through my photos here, that was an amazing spot there. It's a very sort of resort style, but like I've been to resorts before, which in some ways you end up feeling a bit like a captive tourist in. I remember going to Hawaii a couple of years ago, and some people are going to think it sounds really obnoxious, but honestly, I really disliked Hawaii. It was for many, many, many reasons, and one of them was the resort we're at, where it's just like, just felt stuck there. The service was shit. Everyone wanted to be tipped. I know it's an American thing, but just unpleasant. But this was very, very different. This was like, wow, this resort is super, super cool. One of the things that is really striking me now, keeping in mind I traveled, I think, 242 days last year, most of it overseas, a lot of it in the US, across Europe, Israel, places like that. The thing that we do really, really well here in Australia, and as soon as you can all travel again, you all got to come and do this because it's amazing. One of the things we do really, really well is customer service. And I was talking to Charlotte about this. She was saying, you know, isn't it nice where you'll have, say, a waiter come over and they'll serve you a meal or something, and you can have a chat with them, and they're very, it's like polite and respectful and all that because it's a nice resort, but they're just, it's conversational and it's chatty, and everyone's like, you know, g'day, mate, like, how are you? Is everything okay? It's just a very, very friendly environment that has just the right level of professionalism and the right level of friendliness as well. So I thought Hayman Island was just epic that way. And once you're on there, there's really not a lot else you can do. It's all run by Intercontinental on that particular island. There are other islands in the Whitsundays run by the companies with other things to do. So the some of the highlights, kids got to go scuba diving in the swimming pool. You got to be 12 years old to go scuba diving on the reef, apparently. My poor son Ari there was kind of starting to lose his mind because the number of things you need to be 12 years old for, it's like to go scuba diving on the reef, 12 years old, to use one of those, you know, those motorized scooters that go under the water, 12 years old, a bunch of other things as well. But they could scuba dive in the swimming pool, which is really cool. So we did a bit of that. Just like the whole thing, the whole resort is kind of on the beach as well. So you can just go from the beach, walk into the pool. You know, would you like a bottle of champagne on the beach? You know, they'll bring it down to you. Would you like to just lay in the infinity pool and look over the water? It was just so easy. You know, this is what really, so many other places you go, it's like, no, you can't take this thing in here. You can't have that there. This isn't that way. Wasn't any of that. Absolute highlight was chopper flight over the reef. So many of you would have seen this picture before, but there is an island. It's not an island. It's part of the reef called Heart Reef. It looks like a love heart. It features in, it's probably one of the most recognizable landmarks, certainly the Great Barrier Reef in Australia. So we flew over that and just absolutely spectacular colors. Land on a beach called Whitehaven Beach with the choppers. We had to take two choppers, or four of us, because apparently you can only take little ones there. If they're too big, they whip all the sand up. Now, Whitehaven Beach is one of the world's best beaches. Just like every time I was like Googling, what's the world's best beaches? Here's the top five, or the top seven, or the top 10. It was always like Whitehaven, and this place in Thailand, and a few other things. And it's that way because the water's just amazing colors. The sand is so white, and the sand is almost like talcum powder. It's just super, super, super fine. Now, apparently, they took sand from Whitehaven Beach to build the lens for the Hubble telescope as well, because it was the highest quality silica they could get for that, which is super cool. So Whitehaven Beach was pretty amazing. Now, just looking at some of the comments here so I don't get too far behind myself while I take a sip here. Paul says, Paul Kling, I think you posted a route. It looks like you were going from the north straight through the center to the south. That looks like will be one long ride with not much to see. The bit that's going to be the killer is that we're going to be here for another 9 days, and then we'll drop the kids off at the airport in Cairns, and they're going to fly back to the Gold Coast, and we're then going to go from there to Uluru. Now, the problem with this is it's a bloody long way, and there's not much stuff in between. And you're sort of looking at the distances going, how far am I comfortable driving in a day? And then where can I stay along the way? And if I'm honest, where looks like somewhere that we're not going to get murdered because some of these places look super sketchy. So we've broken it down such that we stay, and this is on the map that's at the beginning of this whole thread. Somebody's left the fridge open. I'm sure they'll work that out. But anyway, we're going to go through a place called Richmond, have a night there, going to have a night at Mount Isa. Both those legs, not too bad. Mount Isa to Alice Springs looks like a shocker. It's going to be about 1,100 kilometres in one day, and I'm just hoping that a shitload of that road is 130k an hour and I can sit it on the cruise control, and hopefully the actual total duration is not as bad as what 1,100 kilometres looks like. And then from Alice Springs out to Uluru is about another 450 kilometres. And then we'll have a few nights there so we can kind of relax and chill out before we then go south. But look, it's a massive drive, and I suspect that I will not want to do it again, but I've always wanted to do it as well. And just as an Aussie who's very proud of my country and really hasn't seen much of it, I just feel like this is just one of those things I have to do. So, yeah, Paul, I don't think it's going to be like a lot of red sand, I think, mate. Darren says, you got stingers all the way up where you are. They keep bottles of vinegar. Yeah, so 4 Mile Beach is, we literally just walked over to 4 Mile Beach just before this. And that's, they had warning signs up there about the stingers. They had bottles of vinegar literally there to pour onto you. Now, I had always been told that if you get stung, it's either vinegar or you got to take a leak on yourself, or if it's in an awkward position, you got to find someone very friendly to help you with the task. Apparently, that is not such a good thing, and it could inflame it, and maybe it was a joke in a pub or something and just go out of control. But there are bottles of vinegar everywhere for just that purpose. What was interesting, actually, just walking down here, is just thinking about, in many ways, how inhospitable it is here. Now, look, like, it looks beautiful, and I'll post more photos later today. But we're walking down there. I'm getting bit by mosquitoes the whole time. Now, we have things like midges at home. So midges are very small mosquitoes. They tend to live in the sand and the canals. Some people get hit the whole time, like Charlotte gets bitten all the time. They never bother me. Here, I was just constantly like, get off me kind of thing. So there's that. And then you're looking at bats, which all look, okay, they're not so dangerous, look pretty insane. We'd gone on a crocodile tour today, saw probably about a 4 meter, they reckon 500, 600 kilogram crocodile in the river. Then came back and saw the snake, which I mentioned Ari nearly put his hand on. So there's all that. What else have we seen that's been a bit crazy? Just a lot of really, really harsh stuff. And then, of course, it's just so constantly hot and sweaty. So it's somewhere that's nice to visit. Let's put it like that. But it is an inhospitable land. Darren says, you get fined if ever you get caught taking sand from Whitehaven Beach. That's what I'll tell you what. I don't think there was even any sand left in our shoes, because before we get back on the chopper, they're like, here's a brush, like brush it all off your shoes. I think it was more to keep his chopper clean than what it was to actually take sand away. But it was pretty spectacular. Now, Elizabeth asked an interesting question here. Worried about hotspots and border lockdowns with Northern Beaches outbreak now. So keeping in mind that a lot of people are overseas, we have had an exceptionally good run in Australia by worldwide COVID standards. And I used to talk more about this, and I almost feel like COVID has just become more a more sort of normal part of life, and it's less noteworthy now. But what's been happening is we had a week of zero community transmission anywhere in Australia, which was great because we had little outbreaks in places. Victoria had a big outbreak. We ended up with, I think, about 7,000 active cases at peak there. We got down to zero active cases, which was a pretty good effort. A little flare up in South Australia, and then that got sorted out. And then we had a week with nothing. And in fact, New South Wales, I believe, had 2 weeks with nothing. So New South Wales is the next state down, which is now a long way down from where I am. And just in pretty much the last 48 hours, someone's picked it up from somewhere. They believe it's an international strain, so possibly came in with a returning flight. So we still have new cases of COVID in Australia, but they are all from Aussies coming back from other places, being repatriated, going to hotel quarantine, being picked up there. So it's like, all right, you don't want them to have COVID, but they are in a very controlled circumstance or a very controlled environment, and that does not generally lead to community transmission. But there's been cases where there's been a hotel worker or a security guard or something. And in this case, it looks like maybe an airline crew had it and maybe passed it on to the person driving the bus and then so on and so forth. So the news breaking over the last, really over the last 12 hours, is that it's flared up to about 28 people, I think is the current number, that have had it. So now the northern beaches of Sydney, which is kind of where I used to live, is now considered a hotspot. And if you've been there, you either can't go to a bunch of other places in Australia, or you have to home quarantine if you do to go somewhere else. So to your question, Elizabeth, in terms of whether I'm worried about that, so when we planned this trip, if you look at the map that's right up the start of my tweet thread, there are no capital cities. We're not going to Adelaide. We're going to the Barossa Valley. We're not going to Melbourne. We're going to very country Victoria. We're not going to Sydney. We're going to Thredbo and the Blue Mountains. And that was pretty intentional, because inevitably the larger clusters of population, you're more likely to have outbreaks. And what I don't want to have is a situation where, let's say I was at the northern beaches in Sydney, and then I can't get back into Queensland, or I've got to self-isolate for 14 days or something like that. That would be very unpleasant. So at the moment, it's like we have booked every single night for accommodation. We booked it many weeks ago, deliberately avoiding all of the major metropolitan centres. Who knows what will happen between now and when we stay at those places. So there's certainly a big degree of this is play it by ear. And frankly, all of that I can sort of deal with. I think what would be the worst case would be if there was like an outbreak here now, and then the kids are flying back unattended and things like that. Like that would start to get very, very uncomfortable. So let's hope that doesn't happen. Darren says, are the speed limits up there 130? Not here. Northern Territory is 130. That's only 2,000 kilometres away, though, so we'll be there before you know that. Darren's also mentioned the cassowaries. Now, if you've never heard of a cassowary or don't know what a cassowary is, just Google it. It's like a genetically altered emu. It's just got like this big thing on its head and like a blue head. And very interesting. Cassowary Coast is what they call a lot of this area up here. So the cassowary is a big thing here. I would not want to hit one of those either. And as Christian says, you're on an island with already strict border control, so no wonder you manage this better than most other places. And you're right. Like, this is what we have going for us. It's what New Zealand has going for them. But, you know, even New Zealand, like, they had no cases at all, I think, for like 100 days, and then suddenly they had a flare-up in Auckland a few months ago. So I think what we're all super conscious of is that we have so much going for us, but it doesn't. That's not the immunity. The immunity doesn't even come from the vaccine. We're not going to have 100% immunity from that, but that's the savior. You know, we've still got to get ourselves through to that point. So look, other things, just looking at the list of bits and pieces I've seen, the croc tour today I've mentioned, that was, that's kind of amazing to think that these like Jurassic kind of animals are just like cruising around. I was going to say with reckless abandon. I don't think a croc acts with reckless abandon. But just kind of cruising around, just living there next to everyone else. And just for those of you that are interested, like people getting taken by sharks and crocs or even getting killed by snakes or spiders is exceptionally rare. Like it is so, so rare. And or something like that. It is really, really unusual. And then of the cases where it does happen, there's a big proportion of those, which is people just doing stupid shit. It's like, no, mate, don't go swimming in there. Like that's where the crocodiles are. Here's what the guy today doing the river tours was saying. He'd been running them for like 38 years. And he's like, look, well, they've never had a single issue. Every time there's an issue, it's someone doing something stupid. And it's very often a local just taking a stupid risk. So I'm not worried about that. I'm much more worried, frankly, about the driving, about people on the road. Like that's, we have hundreds of people. I don't think we quite have thousands of people, but many hundreds of people a year die on the roads. We have, I doubt it's a double digit number a year that die from a shark attack or a spider attack or a snake attack or something like that. That is exceptionally, exceptionally rare. And I know it makes great headlines in Norway and other parts of the world. I know that people love to put that shit on the front page because it looks pretty sensational, but it is really, really unusual. So, yeah, in terms of sort of safety. Hey, Ari, can you close the fridge? Can you hear it, the beeping? Thanks, mate. There you go, little helper. Yeah, so anyway, that stuff is really, really unusual. So I'm not worried about that. I'm much more worried about the things. Not just that, I'm more worried about heart disease, you know, something like that. You're much more likely to have heart disease than you are to get eaten by a bloody crocodile. So That's the reality of it here. It is not as sensational as what the headlines do make it out to be. What else see here in the comments? Jai is much more worried about the drop bears. So if you don't know about the drop bears, do Google that. It is quite entertaining. But yeah, that's not something that we really genuinely worry about here. So look, that was pretty much everything I had on my list. If other people have any other comments or something, drop them in. Finally, that fridge is closed. It'll drive me nuts. Drop them in quickly. We're getting towards bat o'clock here at the moment. And if you have a look at this tweet thread, I'm just looking back to the one I did yesterday. There were so many of these suckers in the sky. It did feel like a scene out of Batman. Because Charlotte was like, come and look out at the sky. And look at the sky. And it's like, holy shit. Look how many bats are out there. And then the number of them just like, obviously hanging upside down because they're bats. That's what they do, right? But hanging upside down in the trees and all of them just squeaking and squawking like crazy. So it was just an absolutely fascinating thing to see. So tomorrow we are going out on the Great Barrier Reef. Of course, we were on the Great Barrier Reef in Hayman Island as well. We took the chopper around, all that sort of thing. We didn't get in the water. Tomorrow we are going out on one of the tours. One of the boats takes you out. Then they've got a pontoon out there and you get a nice lunch and all that sort of stuff. But you get in the water, you swim around, see all the fish. So we'll all be having a snorkel because Ari's not 12 years old. And having a good look at it then. I've got the GoPro with an extra spare battery as well. So I'm going to get a bunch of GoPro footage there as well. And that will be that. So thank you very much for tuning into this. I will still be here next week. So next week when I do this, it will be Christmas Day. We did all of our Christmas presents and we had our Christmas lunch and everything before we went away. So frankly, we haven't really even been thinking about it. It'll just be another day. So I'll do another one of these on Christmas Day. I might do it in the morning then. So it's like New Year's Eve. What am I doing? Christmas Eve for other people. We'll see. It'll depend. Maybe I'll be doing something else in the morning. Thank you very much for watching. I hope this one's been interesting. I know there's been a lot of non-cyber stuff, but look, it's a different place with some interesting stuff, and I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for watching, folks.